right, it's that time. Your lunch hour, Mr. Credit here. Guaranteed to make you smarter than everyone else. Do it weekdays at noon right after Ray Lucia. Save the station in your dial. Got a great panel in the studio today. Hot topics on the table. We've got my financial planner in the studio, Dan Osgood, with freeinvestmentaudit.com. Dan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How's it every day I come see you? The sun is shining outside. It's making me not really want to come in here.
Well, don't blame me. Blame San Diego. Hey, you know where you live.
I guess it's the penalty we pay for.
Yeah, the penalty, right. Yeah. Dan gave me a lot of great content for the television show this morning with Scott and Amber on UTTV. I'm going to talk about that. You know, I ran some numbers. I didn't get to share everything on the TV show. There's always a short period of time. Talk radio, we've got a lot more time to discuss that. We've also got in the studio today, first-timer from Corporate Alliance and our relationship there with Gary John at CorporateAlliance.net, KnowEveryone.com. John Wheeler from Regions Bank. How you doing, John?
Great, Derek. It's good to be here with you.
Great to have you. But you're a business banker, so we're going to kind of count on you to give us a little insight into what's happening with business owners and people who are in the business world here in San Diego, see if we can test some of the stories that have been put out there, what's really happening on the ground level. I look forward to getting your opinion on that. So it was on TV this morning with Scott and Ann. We're going to be doing that every Thursday. And here's the thing that I wanted to bring to light, because we all have heard about college costs soaring, you know, tuition is going up, yet the value of the education is going down. It makes no sense, but they still have the demand. I mean, that's really the reason why it's happening. If applications fell, then they would have to drop their prices. But the universities still get so many applications that they can continue to raise the prices. But what does it really cost? I wanted to know this. I wanted to know for myself, what is it really going to cost today? If I was sending someone off to college, sending a child off to college, what would it cost over the course of the next 4 years? Tuition, room and board, food, books, supplies, transportation, personal expenses, everything. I want to know what's the number. What's the actual number? So I went to the San Diego State website, pulled up as much data as I could from there, and what I found was that the basic tuition and fees for 2012 and 13 for undergraduate California residents at San Diego State is only $6,500 for the year.
For the year?
Yeah, which is pretty darn cheap, or so it sounds, right? And so I fear that a lot of parents would see that and go, oh, but we could pull that off. You know, I mean, if we had to pull a rabbit out of a hat, we could find $6,500, you know, and take care of tuition fees. But that's not the majority of the cost involved. So here's what happens when you add in food, housing. Now, you can save a little bit if they can live at home, but that makes things very difficult when you've got 3 hours between classes and parking and all that stuff. So you got to live near campus or on campus, but usually they're going to move out. So you can save a little money there. But if you add food, housing, books, supplies, transportation, personal expenses, you're looking at a total of $25,500 per year. $25,500. So now we're talking about $25,000 instead of $6,500. It's a big difference.
It's a little tougher to crack.
And then you start running the numbers. So the tuition is really only about a quarter of what the actual expense is. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's tough to prepare for. So then if you go, okay, so let's prepare for that. Let's say we're going to send our children to state, or at least give them enough money so that in their college fund so that they could go to state and have it fully paid for. If they choose to go to Yale or go out of state, hey, that's on them. So we agree as a family unit we're going to put aside enough money for that. What's it going to take? Well, let's break down the numbers. That $25,500 turns into $102,000 for four-year education. That's if they can get it done in 4 years, which might be a challenge.
That's a big question.
Which could very well be a challenge. But if they can get it done in 4 years, $102,000. So if you take 18 years, that's 216 months. Now, 18 years meaning the day that child's born, you start putting money into this fund and you put it in there every month until the day they turn 18. If you got 0% interest, or if you put it in mattress money, or you set it into a bank account, you know, or a savings account, which is getting almost zero interest right now, you need almost $500 a month. Almost $500 a month is what you'd have to save if you got zero interest for one child to fully fund their four-year education at San Diego State University. $500 a month for 18 years. Now, if you could get 5%, it does change things. And I came up with 5% because the last 116 years in the stock market, the average rate of return is 4.9. All right. In the last 18 years, I went back exactly 18 years to today, and you get 5.75 in the S&P. So I use 5%. Fair number, right? Fair number. If you get 5% on your money, then you only need about $300 a month per child. in order to fully fund to get that $102,000 number. Now, you're going to have skin in the game for that of about $63,000. In other words, you're going to get the rest of the money, the rest of the $102,000 from interest.
Compounding.
Exactly. So the difference between getting that 5% and not is pretty big. You know?
Absolutely.
That's big.
$200 a month. Now, that said, the question that derived all this was, what should I focus on? Should I focus on putting money towards my kids' college fund? Or should I focus on putting money towards my own retirement? Because I don't have enough money to fund both. So what do I do? Do I do half and half? Do I do 75-25? How do I handle that situation? And here is my very hardline answer, and I would love to get your guys' opinion on this. My answer is very simple here. You have to fully fund your retirement first, and there's one reason. Because your kids will be able to get a student loan. They will. If you have a heartbeat, you can get a student loan. And the reason that they'll give a student loan to anybody is because you got to pay them back. You can't bankrupt the debt. You can't get rid of the debt. They can garnish your wages. They can levy your bank accounts. They will get the money from you. So they'll give you a student loan. However, when you're 80 years old and you ran out of money, nobody's loaning you anything.
Nope.
Plain and simple. So that's the reason why you've got to fully fund your retirement.
They'll prop you up at the entrance of Walmart and you just wave.
Yeah, exactly. That's your backup plan. Hopefully,
only so many of those jobs around.
Only so many of those jobs. Hopefully you're capable physically. I mean, standing there all day is not easy to do.
Absolutely.
So here's the deal. You've got to fully fund your retirement first. If you have the ability financially to put money aside for your kids, you got to do it early and do it often, because that's when you can really make it something that's not cumbersome. If you wait till they're 10 and start thinking about it, now what happens to this number? You know, the 0% number turns into over $1,000 a month that you have to start socking away. And the 5% number gets up to in the 700s. So it makes a big, big difference if you only have 7 or 8 years to do this, or 10 years to do this. So that was the point I was trying to make. But you got to fully fund your retirement first. Now, Dan, I know you might offer a potentially a different opinion on that, or maybe just the devil's advocate here on something like this. But I'm pretty stuck on this one.
Well, I've seen it on pretty much all different directions, where some people absolutely want to make sure their kids are taken care of and put that as a priority. And then other cases where absolutely they want to take care of themselves and say, well, my kid's going to have to fend for themselves. I had to. And then another strategy I've seen, which probably makes the most sense, is funding your retirement and not trying to pay 100% for the college. Because, like you said, there are student loans available. It may help give a sense of accomplishment and responsibility on those kids to have some of the college funded, make it a little bit easier, but make them either work, get a job while they're in college, or get some outside funding that maybe they have some amount of debt afterwards that they're going to have to responsibly pay back.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you can fully fund your retirement account, mm-hmm. you have your plan in place, you know how much money you want to try to accumulate, you know how much you want to stick to the side every single month, and you're putting that amount there, and you got an extra $100 to put into a college account.
Absolutely.
Go for it.
Right.
Go for it. But here's the difference. If you put the $300 a month aside and say you get the 5%, it's only going to cost you $63,000 to get the $100,000 that you need to pay for the kids' school. But if your child has to go and get the student loan for the $102,000, yep. and they pay that back at 5% over 10 years, which would be a pretty darn good rate. Most of these rates are a little bit higher than that. But if they were able to get 5% over 10 years, it's going to cost them $1,100 a month. So they're going to have a college degree, and they're going to get out of school, go looking for a job with an $1,100 a month gorilla on their back to start for 10 years.
Right.
That's the difference. So it is drastically more efficient if you can put the money aside yourself.
Absolutely.
Start the day they're born. Do it every single month. That's what I've been doing for my daughter. We're 6 years in. She's got a nice little egg there. And, you know, I anticipate she'll have about $150,000 is what, just on the projection that we're on, that's what she'll have in her account.
You're sending her to USC. Oh, wait, that covers walking on the campus.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah. It doesn't actually cover the enrollments of any classes.
Doesn't cover anything. Allows you to tour the campus.
Yeah, you were using an example, San Diego State.
Right.
And
yeah.
I think you set it up that it was one child.
Right. So what about your case, John?
So, yeah, in my situation, I have, I just up to this month had four teenagers. The oldest just turned 20. So, you know, you start multiplying those numbers that you were just articulating by four, and it starts to sound insurmountable.
Right.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that hear those numbers and go, oh, my goodness. And that's probably why a lot of families go, you know, one or two children is plenty.
Yeah, totally.
it gets pretty expensive. So what I would offer is just maybe a kind of a counterpoint to that is one of the things that we've looked at. First of all, it really knowing what the plan is or what the costs are has really heightened my sense and my wife's sense of how important it is to be participating with our children all the way through elementary, junior high, and high school with regard to grades. Because we've seen with teenagers, it makes a big difference if they've got good GPA. That makes a huge difference in terms of grants, scholarships that might be available that can help offset some of that cost. And the other thing that, you know, we're a sports family, so all of them are involved in sports. And I think it's every parent's dream that if their child is involved in some sport, that their child is going to be the one that's going to get that full ride. Mm-hmm. Well, we've learned a lot of things along the way in that process, too, that most schools aren't offering that, and you're probably talking about a fraction of a percent that really end up accomplishing that coming out of high school. So to your point, Derek, it's absolutely critical that people begin looking at what those numbers are, participating early in the process, even if they say, you know what, Derek, I couldn't afford that much money. Well, it heightens the value of really helping your child early on in their educational process. Don't wait till their junior year in high school to start trying to figure out, oh, we need to get your
cramming.
GPA.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
Let's cram. Let's get you to that isn't going to work.
Well, it's funny because Scott Kaplan, who hosts the TV show, is on This Morning with UTTV. He also has four children, four girls he's got. And so the situation that or what I offered to him was the advice you gave me last night, Dan, which was, hey, you know, the 529 plan. So flexible, redirectable. If you've got, you know, your retirement number, let's say it's $1,000 a month, and you and your wife decide, hey, $1,000 a month, that's what we need to put in our retirement account, but we can afford $1,200 a month to be putting away. So we're going to stick $200 into a 529. You could redirect that as it builds up and each kid comes through, right, so that money could flow over to the next one.
Right. You could start it with the oldest child, and maybe, like in the case of sports scholarship, they get that and won't need any money. You can still access that money with the 529 and get the tax-free benefit of those withdrawals, even with the scholarship. But maybe there's no need for that child to have any money, or maybe they decide to go join a rock band and you don't want them to have that money. You can then point it and say, okay, we're changing who the beneficiary of this plan is. It's now daughter number two. And maybe she follows the same path and you do the same thing again. Say, okay, now it's daughter number three.
Or maybe she uses half of the money.
Right.
And then you redirect what's left to daughter number three.
Just let it grow. Correct.
Exactly. And that's so cool. Now, the other thing about the 529 is that you can really front load the thing. So there's no reason to be paying for these higher educational expenses out of your post-taxed money.
Right. It is. By front loading, you are putting the money in post-tax. And that's why you get some of the breaks. But you can put exactly 5 years worth of allotment in at up front. So I think the numbers this year are like $70,000. No, I'm sorry. $70,000 per person. So per couple, you could put $140,000 in to give you that 5 years allotment for one child
as a husband
and wife on day one.
Okay. So you could front load the thing if you need to. If you haven't thought about it, haven't put together a way to find an advantage for college funding for tax purposes, then you can use the 529 to do that, and you can front load it quite a bit because we've just learned that that's enough to get one child through at least.
Right. Well, depending on where you want them to go.
Where you want to go.
If it's a Harvard or Yale or USC or some other private school, it could be much more than that. But it's a way to really get the ball rolling if you can afford to put a giant amount. And you don't have to put the full max amount. You can put any portion of that. So maybe you had an extra $25,000 laying around. You could put that in there, and that counts. And you're allowed to let that ride from day one.
Yeah. It's something that has to be taken a look at. But, I mean, know this, though. It just makes logical sense. I have no agenda, no reason to tell you this other than it just makes logical sense. Make sure your retirement is fully funded first. As parents, we all want to take care of our children. It's hardwired into us to think about them first. But in this case, you've got to think about yourself first. They will be able to get loans. It will not keep them from going to school. No one's going to loan you money if you're 80 years old.
There are also a lot, like we mentioned, there are a lot of grants and other free money sources that are untapped every year. So it makes sense to talk to a good college counselor or service that will explore all those options for you.
Yeah, even I got grants. Even I got grants for my wow. my terrible grades in high school. I got grants. I did some pretty good in the standardized tests, but and that was the only reason they would give me any money. But even I got money to go to school, and I wasn't that great in school. So it's proof positive that does exist. All right, when we come back, your retirement checklist. What should be on there? What are the things you should be looking at? We've got my financial planner in the studio, Dan Osgood with freeinvestmentaudit.com. We will check that checklist in just a minute. We'll make you smarter than everyone else. Stick around.
If you'd like to speak with Mr. Credit, hey, call 888-888-0154 or email through MrCreditRadio.com. That's MrCreditRadio.com.
Jamming out. That's what you know Adam's in the studio. You know Adam's running the show when we're jamming out like this. Appreciate you, my friend Adam Clark, running the show today. My financial planner Dan Osgood in the studio from freeinvestmentaudit.com and John Wheeler from Regions Bank, making you smarter than everyone else, just like we do every day. And you know, we won't be able to do it tomorrow because tomorrow we've got what is it, Adam? Is it it's high school baseball or
high school basketball finals. We have quadruple hitters starting at 11 a.m. going all the way to about 8 p.m. tomorrow night. So
it's all pretty much all day long high school basketball, and it's like the regional tournament or something like that?
Yeah, it's the San Diego CIF Finals, boys and girls, all Viejas Arena. And it's going to happen tomorrow and on Saturday as well. So we'll have it on both 1700 and Mighty 1090.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, they put on the Mighty too, huh?
And the Mighty.
All right, we're on the Mighty. Joining us now by phone, a good friend of mine, Mr. Mike Watson. Mike, are you there, sir?
Hey, Derek. How you doing, sir?
What's going on, Mr. Wilson?
Oh, same old, same old.
All right. He's working hard, I see.
Working hard in my office.
You know, Mike, I wanted to bring you on today because we've been looking for, and you know, credit repair is something that people talk about a lot, and they hear Mr. Credit, and they immediately assume that I do credit repair. So I get all these credit repair questions, and that's fine because I am a certified credit expert. But the thing that people don't understand about credit repair is that it does work, and not everyone needs it. But it does work. Talk about what you're doing now with United Credit, and I know you have also you're kind of like the hair club for men, right? You're not just a you know the owner, but you're also a client. You've done the program yourself. Give us an example of your experience.
I'm about halfway through my process. I had a lot of things happen to me back in 2007, including a bankruptcy, and we're just working on those with United Credit, which is a Better Business Bureau rated company with A+ rating, which is really good. And we're just trying to get rid of all the bad things on my credit. There's lots and lots of credit cards, late payments, charge-offs, foreclosures. You can really, really hold these credit bureaus to the wall, and you can get a lot of these things dismissed off your credit report.
Yeah, it's funny because what's interesting about how the credit reporting system works and the business works is that the credit bureaus don't actually police anything. They simply take the creditor's words for it. So if the creditor reports a late payment on something, the bureaus just slap it right on your credit file. However, according to the Fair Credit Reporting Act, it's the creditor who has to prove. They have to be able to prove within 30 days if you challenge that item, and they have to be able to prove beyond any doubt at all. So they have to have physical evidence in hand that you were in fact late or whatever it may be for that particular poor item. And if they can't, then they have to remove it from your credit profile.
That's right.
And so that's right. How credit repair works. Now, the thing that's neat about United Credit, because I've always had a local person that I could go to help someone if they needed a credit repair service. But what's neat about what you guys are doing with United Credit is that it is a flat $499 per person. And part of the problem with credit repair has always been, well, it's very expensive because, you know, these guys, they charge per item or whatever it is. It ends up being thousands of dollars. And even though it works, a lot of people can't afford it. But $499 per person is an incredible deal. How in the world are you guys able to do that and still have it be something as good of a functioning business as it is?
That's all really, you know, if you're paying more than that, if you're paying $2,000 and $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000, you're actually paying too much, and really you're getting ripped off. United Credit has cleared negative items, 635,000 to date. So they've done a lot of work. They have 10 years experience, and they're just doing it on a regular basis. And the amount of people out there, they're rating 78 to 80% of people have some negative items or erroneous items on their credit report that needs fixing. So a $499, it in the long term, it can save you thousands on home payments, car payments.
No, there's no question about the value of it.
And get it all straightened up and get it cleared off your credit report.
Yeah, no question about it. And so it's nice to have, a big company like that that's nationally recognized with the AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau and all of those things, but also to have someone local like yourself who not only works for the company but who has used the service yourself and knows how it works and how to go through it for people who might want to get started on fixing and cleaning up their credit. So if you would like to find out more about the program with United Credit, you can talk to Mr. Watson directly. Here's the phone number. It's the Credit Repair Helpline. It's 800-525-1349. So if you'd like to find out more about how the program works, what you get for the $499, there's a lot included in that. 800-525-1349. Mr. Watson, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and I'll see you next Monday.
All right. Have a good one, my friend.
Bye, so have a great weekend.
You too. So, we've seen a number of different things over the course of the last 3 years doing this radio show with regard to what's changed in the credit repair world. What's really interesting to me and the reason why I agreed to let these guys come on the air is because they're local. They have a flat fee charge, so you know what you're getting into, whereas a lot of times you sign up for credit repair, and although it may work, if it works out really well, you may end up with a huge bill in the end. Some people, it's kind of like, what are you fighting for here? If they do a really good job, you end up owing them a ton of money. With the way that it works with the flat fee with United Credit is they empower you to do some of the things on your own, and they give you instructions on how to do it so they can charge a smaller amount. And it makes sense, but it also is more effective because when you have companies that are using templates, template letters or template disputes, those things can be discounted by the credit bureaus through the dispute process. So it's not only less expensive, but it's more effective, and I think that's why they have such a good rating and have been so successful. So if you or someone you know wants to fix their credit or needs credit repair services, 800-525-1349. So we were talking earlier about, retirement and, putting money away. And, one of the things that we didn't get a chance to mention was long-term care insurance and how the biggest expense that people have. When I walked out of the television studio today, a lady stopped me and she said, "Hey, here's what I've got. I've got a paid-off house. I've got a paid-off car. I feel good about those two things. I've got $100,000 in my retirement account. I don't make very much money. Is that going to be enough?" And so the first question I had for her was, "Do you have long-term care insurance?" And she said, "Yes." So she's actually in a pretty decent spot. Now, obviously, the more you can sock away, the better. But she's going to be on Medicare and Social Security.
Right. And the long-term care just offloads that risk of some catastrophic illness or even just a temporary couple month issue. It's going to step in and pay the bills for her. So that's a golden piece of her puzzle.
I look at long-term care insurance as portfolio insurance. I mean, you can't buy insurance on your portfolio, although maybe someone should come up with that product. Maybe we should talk to Steve Bick about that.
There you go.
portfolio insurance. Ding! That's why I look at long-term care insurance, because what's the one thing that could really just wipe you out? Medical expenses.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I actually heard it put this way, Derek, talking to a specialist in that area. He said, we have homeowners insurance to protect the value of the home because we recognize its value, fire or whatever. And I think his figure was that less than 5% will ever make a claim on home insurance, but somewhere of upwards of 70%. Will have a long-term care issue.
Yes, 7 out of 10.
Seven out of 10, and yet the tendency is, it's never going to happen to me.
Yeah.
Right? But my house might burn down, so I'll insure that.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, they force you to do that, which is interesting.
Well, that's right.
The mortgage company forces you to get the insurance which you are likely not to need, but no one's going to force you to get the insurance that you are almost, you are likely to need.
Well, even, now as a banker, of course, Regions isn't a consumer bank per se, but that's one of the things that most people don't own their home. The bank does.
Right.
So the bank forces them to have insurance because they want to protect their collateral. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about our health, it'll be interesting to see if part of the Affordable Care Act, more affectionately known as Obamacare, will start to require that of people as well. That
so they, I was going to say, I could see that being an see amendment. That it could be in one of the pages that nobody's read yet.
Yeah.
That is down the road, that it could be a requirement.
I haven't finished the 2,500-page document myself either.
We don't call it the Affordable Care Act around here because there's nothing affordable about
no,
it.
No, there isn't.
We call it Obamacare, yes. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we're going to call it from now until forever. We keep seeing things getting uncovered. Jim McFaul was on Tuesday.
Oh,
Dan, did you hear that? He
found
another cost. So what was happening was he was looking. And their firm, Neil Dimot, is amazing. The way they treat their employees is just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, they cover 70% of their health care costs.
Wow.
And he was looking into getting them a long-term care rider on their health policies. But long-term care, it's pointless unless you can do it for the long term, right? There's no sense in getting long-term care for 10 years, and then if you can't afford it after that.
Right.
So he was trying to project out costs for their health care and the budgeting for that. Over the course of the next 2 years, as a result of Obamacare, just the health care costs are going to go up by about 40% for them. Okay, 40% healthcare costs are going up. Now, who knows what they would have gone up otherwise? They would have gone up, but probably not that much. They've never seen an increase that big before. So it's going to cost the firm from like $500,000 a year they're spending on to like $700,000 a year that they're going to be spending on health insurance. And so what he found in digging even further is that in Obamacare, it does force you to pay a per dependent fee even if you are covering your employees. So there's a fee you have to pay if you don't cover them, and then there's a fee you have to pay if you cover them. And it starts off the first couple of years, it's like $2 per person or something like that, but then it eventually gets to where it's like $60 per person. And it's the per dependent. So if they're covering a family of five, that's another $300 right there that goes into their cost. Now, some companies are going to have to, they're going to pass that down to the insured. Yeah, they're going to have to. Especially a big firm like that. There's lots of employees. They're trying to cover everybody, but just another thing floating to the top here, floating to the surface finally, as we dig into this. How many pages is it? 2,500? I thought it was 4,000.
Well, another one of the local guys actually runs a benefits company here in town that I was having lunch with. And he said, John, the bill was, X number of pages. But in our dialogue with the three federal agencies that are going to be responsible for regulating this, there's over 50,000 pages, additional pages of documentation on what those regulations are going to be. 50,000 pages already. And it hasn't truly gone into force until next year. So you can imagine, that amount of documentation, what business is going to be able to even begin to decipher that?
Comprehend it. Just you have no chance. You just have to take people's words for it. It's just crazy what's going on. That's John Wheeler from Regents Bank. He's a business banker. When we come back, we're going to get his opinion on exactly what some of these small business owners are having to deal with regards to Obamacare and just some of the other things happening in the local economy. We will get a perspective, a ground floor perspective. We will make you smarter than everyone else. It's guaranteed. Stick around.
If you'd like to speak with Mr. Credit, call 888-888-0154 or email through MrCreditRadio.com. That's MrCreditRadio.com.
Welcome back. Thanks for hanging out. Mr. Credit here, last segment of the week. We'll have a very exciting show on Monday, so don't worry. Tomorrow, enjoy your basketball. Tomorrow on Saturday, right here on ESPN 1700 and the Mighty 1090 High School Basketball Championships. Men's and women's as well. I guess you say boys and girls.
Boys and girls.
In high school, you say boys and girls. We've got John Wheeler in here from Regents Bank. He's a business banker. John and I met at Corporate Alliance. You've heard Gary John on here before and his many voices and talents. A funny man, Gary John. What's neat about Corporate Alliance, in my opinion, John, is just the structure. How easy it is to go there and meet new people and be able to, find other people who can advocate on your behalf, who can, hear what your issues are, what you're trying to accomplish, help you accomplish those things. You learn about businesses that, it's like, wow, that's a business? That's amazing that you guys are doing that somehow as a business. It's really educational, and I think it's something that you should do. Here's what's cool. Corporate Alliance, they let you come to one of their events for free. So all you have to do, you're a business professional here in San Diego, or even if you just you work for a company and you want to get involved, there's a Jumpstart program for that. All you have to do is email Gary at knoweveryone.com for free entry to an event. Gary at knoweveryone.com. You have nothing to lose. There's always a breakfast or lunch included, and you'll get to meet some really cool people. Gary at knoweveryone.com. So tell us, John. Business owners, Obamacare, we just talked about 50,000 pages of regulatory garbage. I mean, how could any business owner possibly be able to get to that and comprehend it? And if not, what are they thinking?
Well, that is the challenge. I mean, for those of us that are kind of on the street, as it were, with businesses, you can see a tremendous amount of uncertainty that it creates for them. You know, they're trying to understand just the original, you know, 2,500 pages or whatever it was of the original law. And that's been around now for almost 2 years, and stuff trickles out. You know, I'd mentioned that one of the contacts that I have is in the benefits administration side, so they really understand, they have to understand what this means. And the additional documents that have been written to try to regulate how this law is going to be enforced is monumental. So our recommendation is to always be talking to those professionals, you know, in the commercial insurance field. Those people have to stay on top of this. It's affecting their industry dramatically, because if they don't become part of some of these exchanges, state exchanges, no one's really certain exactly what's going to happen to an entire industry there. And of course, that affects the industry of business, because how are they going to take care of providing insurance for their employees, for themselves, for their families? Is it going to be done at a federal level? And there's still just a tremendous amount of uncertainty around that. So it is something that at Regions, we're actually talking about helping put together a symposium where we get experts in there, where we can share that information to the. But it, again, one of the challenges, it changes so rapidly.
Who's the expert?
Yeah, just about the time you think you've got it. As an example, March 1st, one of the requirements that had come out was that every business owner had to have given notification to their employees of what they were going to do. Well, as businesses were trying to figure out, well, what does that have to include? They really couldn't get an answer, so they just decided to push that off to the end of the summer or maybe early fall, and they've promised that they'll have a template letter that businesses could potentially use so that they can meet that requirement. That's just one small example of the monumental changes that are taking place.
My biggest problem with the regulations is that it always slows everything down. It's not what we need. You know, we don't need any more rules. I mean, imagine you have 500 people, right, who are in charge of making rules, and you get a new 500 people every couple of years. How many years later is it that you have so many rules that no one knows what's a rule and what isn't? I mean, how many years does that take?
Right. Well,
we're there now, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we passed it a while back.
Yeah. You only need so many rules.
Right.
I mean, you just keep making new rules and keep making new rules, and my goodness. So from a business owner's perspective, because you work closely with these people, I mean, you're their banker, has it frozen their activity? I mean, the unknown, are they bracing for something? Are they, you know, tighter with their wallets and just saying, you know, gosh, we don't know what's coming, so we better prepare or we'll be out of business?
Well, think about it from the maybe another illustration that will resonate. If in your own family budget, you know that there's something major that is likely to come down the road. We were talking about college expenses earlier. If I haven't planned for college expense and I've got a senior in high school who's been accepted to 3 schools, I know there's something coming. Now, maybe they will get some scholarships, maybe there'll be some grants, but there's probably an expense coming. If my option, if I'm a responsible parent, is, well, I could buy a new car or I could set aside, I'm going to leave this money and set it aside in case there is an expense that I'm expected to pick up, I'm probably not buying the new car. Well, the same is true in business today.
I see.
If I don't know what this cost is going to be and I'm a business owner, I'm going to conserve my cash, because I know if I run out of cash, I'm done as a business. And by the way, as a banker, after you run out of cash, not a good time to call your banker. That's not when banks like to step in and say, here, yeah, let us help you. That might be an opportunity for a venture capital group or some other investors to come in. And by the way, you're going to give up some ownership of the company. Banks never ask for ownership of the company. We're not. That's not the game we are in.
Right. But you aren't necessarily the last resort. You are a proactive solution.
Absolutely. And that's one of the beauties of working with a community bank for San Diego businesses, because it's to our benefit to have businesses do well. But we want them to do well. We want the business community to thrive here, and which is part of the reason that we're looking at, you know, what questions can we help answer with regard to Obamacare, because we know there are a lot of businesses that are conserving cash because they're just not sure how this is going to affect them. As an example, most people that I've talked to that have less than 50 employees, they say, hey, it doesn't affect me. Well, it doesn't affect you today. I don't know if it's going to affect you in 5 years. I don't know when that's going to change, because we've already seen that it hasn't slowed the cost of health care insurance costs. They're still going up at a very rapid rate. So the promise was that I think our insurance premiums, and this was a presidential promise, would go down $2,500 a year. Well, they've actually gone up almost that exact amount. So it's not lowering costs, and it has created a tremendous amount of uncertainty.
You're right. I only have one question.
So I know who's asked to kick.
You got
to
figure it out. Somebody needs a boot. Now, when you find that expert on Obamacare, will you please let me know who it is? Because I would love to have them on this show.
Yeah, it'll probably take a panel.
Wouldn't we have some fun with that person, Dan?
To discuss 50,000 pages?
We
don't have enough time.
Yeah. Well, as with many government things, it's not trying to figure out what they've done. It's figuring out, how do I work around it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the tough part with this thing, you know, because what's the workaround, you know, is the workaround that you have to let people go so you get below some threshold, you know, and can you even work around it? Because we've seen now that companies that are even providing insurance, which you think would, you know, alleviate them from having to pay some sort of tax or additional fee, they're also having to reach out and pay a fee.
Right. Not necessarily the case. And some of the workarounds that have been tossed out there by different people who really don't seem to understand what's going on, you know, get your employee count under 50. I've read some things where they have what they call a look back period, and they can look back on that and go, wait a minute, you're manipulating your employee count to avoid Obamacare, and we're going to penalize you for that. So I'd really seek some good counsel on this before you make any decisions.
I would love to know who the good counsel is. That's my hard part with the Obamacare thing. You know, I mean, the smartest guy I know in the insurance world is Jim McFaul, and he's still uncovering things anew. Mm-hmm. So who do we contact, and what's going to happen to these businesses, Dan? Are they going to have to start looking away from healthcare as an even a potential benefit? It's just so much easier to pay the fee than it is to cover people. It's way cheaper,
right? And just Jim explained that where people are saving hundreds of thousands of dollars by paying the penalty.
Yeah,
where I'm sure that means that at some point in the near future they're going to increase
the penalty will change
to make it
right.
Not worth your while to,
right.
to pay that penalty.
I mean, we know from an economic standpoint that it's got to be an impossibility. If it's cheaper for insurance or for companies not to pay for insurance for their employees and just pay a penalty, then the penalty will not fund the new cost of insurance for the government, and the penalty will change.
Yep.
If someone knows an Obamacare expert, I'd love for you to send me an email. If you know someone who's an expert in the law of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, I would love for you to tell me who that person is. I'll have them on this show in 2 seconds. Email me, MrCreditRadio.com. All right, it's Thursday, so it's Big Mac and Ryan White coming right at you. Fantastic show today. Adam, well done back there, my friend. Always appreciate you. Look forward to seeing you next week. Dan Osgood, my financial planner, freeinvestmentaudit.com, and John Wheeler from Regents Bank. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll see you then.